Hi, I'm Yvonne.
Hi.
I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship. You want to move that up? Or?
Whatever.
You can hear me, right? Yeah. All right. So, Naina, thank you. Thank you for the acknowledgement. It's good to be heard and it's good to be seen. And growing up in a family disease of unheard, unseen, and criticism, it is really nice to be acknowledged. And the difference is that I can own that today. I couldn't own anything when I came in. I didn't own my opinion. I didn't own what I thought. I didn't own my achievements. And I definitely did not own my defects. That was not in my in my repertoire. And so it's always an honor and a privilege to be of service, whether I like it or not, whether I think I need to do this or not. It's irrelevant. I want to say thank you to Wednesday Morning for tossing me this opportunity. Why don't you do it? Okay. Wasn't the plan, but all right. And I love that meeting because it's a book study of how Al-Anon works, and that's all we do. We don't have speakers. We don't do anything. We just read the book over and over and go back and forth. There's part one, and then there's part two in the book. And so what I want to do today is I want to try to incorporate that book a little bit in what I have to share. And first of all, so I grew up in the Netherlands, so that's the accent that you hear. I came here and I was about 32 years old, and I came here illegal, and I was here illegal for 14 years. Let me get that out of the way. So some of my story involves that. My mother is born and raised in Nazi Germany and was an incest survivor by her own father, who was an alcoholic. My father was born in Indonesia, which was a crown colony of the Netherlands, and was incarcerated by the Japanese in the Japanese concentration camps. And I'm an only child. Welcome to the family disease of alcoholism. Lots of attention, but not always good acknowledgement. And I had no idea about the family disease. I had no idea that I was affected. I had no idea. I just know that at a certain point in my life, I was like, you know, I'm looking for normal people and everybody was crazy and I was the only normal one. And it wasn't until I got to Al-Anon that I discovered I'm the crazy one and other people are maybe not so crazy as me. So it was hard to relate to people sometimes, and I didn't know that alcoholism is a disease of relationships. Welcome to the newcomer, or for those of you who are newer, keep coming back. It's free. It's a choice. Don't like it? Don't take it. And that's what I liked about Al-Anon. I didn't have to sign in. Nobody told me what to do. Nobody said where I needed to go. I just could come and go, and I came and I went, and I was very quiet, and I sat in the back, and I wanted to hear what you had to say. And I came in on a Tuesday night, and after 2 weeks, I couldn't go to a Tuesday night meeting, and I chose to go to a Wednesday night meeting. And this lady is sitting in that Wednesday night meeting, and she says, "What's your name?" Yvonne. "Hi, Yvonne." Great. Every Wednesday I walked in, it was, "Hi, Yvonne." I'm like, can you just take it down? Trying not to be noticed. And until some weeks into it, I walked in and I was all prepared to hear the, "Hi, Yvonne." And there was nothing. And I'm like, where is, oh. And all of a sudden I missed that acknowledgement. And I realized that it was good to be seen. And it was good to be acknowledged. And I didn't know that that was something that I needed. I didn't want to be seen and I didn't want to be heard. I just wanted you to see me and think that I was perfect. Hence, I dress perfect, I look perfect, and I tried to act perfect. And I wondered why nobody ever related to me. And I don't relate to perfect people. I don't get it because I'm so imperfect. But anyway, so I grew up in the Netherlands and I came here and I was a bartender for many years and I worked in the clubs and I was a good bartender because I knew exactly what your drink was. I knew your name and I know what you wanted, and I had that patted down. And when I came to Al-Anon, I thought, oh, now I know why that was a strength of mine. Didn't know that either. There's a lot of things that I found out here that I didn't know. And what I didn't know, I didn't know. I didn't know what I didn't know, and I didn't know that when I came in. But when I came in, I was told that I needed to make this program a part of me. And you do that by doing service. And I'm like, okay, I guess so. So I started looking around, and I heard the word Alateen, and I thought, well, you were pretty boring. You were talking to me about emphysema while I was smoking a cigarette. I'm like, you just leave me alone. You make me want to smoke more. And so I checked out Alateen, and I started doing Alateen service very early on. And I became a GR very, very early on. I had no idea. I just needed some schedules. Same lady that would say, hi, Yvonne, gave me the key to a meeting one day. I'm like, nah, nah. She goes, yeah, you can do this. Here you go. And she just trotted off. And I'm like, oh, God. And so I looked at this key, and I came an hour and a half early, and I wandered through the church. I thought, oh, my God, I could have a party here. I could sleep here. I could just sit here and nobody knows I'm here. I love being under the radar. I love dropping off of the face of the earth. It was the only time I could actually take a breath. Nobody knows where I am. No phone, no nothing. I'm illegal. Apparently, I have a jest for that. And so I needed to set up the meeting and everything needed to be perfect, but we didn't have meeting schedules. And I was hyperventilating, thinking, oh, my God, this meeting is going to go down. No meeting schedules. I need to get them. And she goes, well, just go over there on Tuesday nights. I said, well, what is it? She goes, just walk in and you'll get a meeting schedule. I'm like, where are they? She goes, just go. And I land in a district meeting. So that was the beginning of being a GR. And I couldn't follow the agenda. Never been in a business meeting. I thought, you know, it must be my English. But of course, I'm not good enough and I'm not smart enough. And I kept coming back because, by God, I was going to figure out how this worked. I didn't understand, but they did crosstalk. That was a lot better than sitting in a meeting. And when I came in, I didn't talk for 6 years. I shared maybe two or three times, but I just didn't talk. I didn't want to share because I thought I had nothing to say. And what I had to say was stupid. And I didn't want you to know that I was stupid. And besides, today's information was tomorrow's ammunition, so I can tell you anything. I wanted to know all the dirt on you, and then I would go home and collect that. You never know. You never know. So I kept coming back. And as I kept coming back, I started doing more of everything, which I will get to. But it says, now I have an old version of this book, so it might not be corresponding with the new version. But anyway, I didn't change anything, but I did put it in the I statements because I like to read the book How Al-Anon Works in I statements. Because if I read it in the you statements and the we statements, then it pertains to you and not to me. And it's so easy for me to be different and so easy for me to not identify with you. It's like, yeah, but you're worse than I don't have that. And no, I don't do that. And when I put it in the I statement, I'm like, wow, all of a sudden I'm reading about me. And so I learned in Al-Anon to share in the I statements. If I do we and you, number one, I don't own what I say because I don't want to own it. Don't you know when we? No, I don't know what you do. I know what I do. Today I can own my stuff, good, bad, ugly, and indifferent. So it's always in the I statements for me. However, what I did learn that in the business meetings when I do business, it needs to be a we statement. And I didn't want to do the I in the meeting and I didn't want to do the we in business because, see, I already told them it wasn't a good idea and then everybody wants to do it anyway. And then what? I have to fix it? And I wanted to say, well, you all wanted to do that. And my service sponsor says, well, you don't get to say that. Well, it wasn't me. She goes, we. I'm like, no, I'm not taking responsibility for this. She goes, oh, yeah, you are. She goes, how are you going to be a part of a group if you keep separating yourself out? I'm like, damn it. It's really hard for me to be a part of. It's so much easier for me to just stand apart from. And I will do that every single time. My head will separate me out every single time. So the many faces of Al-Anon. None of us comes to Al-Anon because our lives resemble the happily ever after. I come to Al-Anon because I'm grappling with an assortment of problems. Other people's stories seem so different from mine that I may not realize there's a common thread. Each of us has been affected by someone else's drinking problem. At first, for a variety of reasons, I may not be aware of any drinking problem. I identify the problem as a bad temper, immaturity, too much or too little religion, lack of willpower, bad luck, the wrong boss, the wrong friends, or the wrong city. Oh, the children, the in-laws. Physical illness, disability, oh, and financial irresponsibility. Or any number of things that go hand in hand with the drinking. The violence, the financial and legal problems, the insults and excuses, unreliable, irresponsible behavior. Besides, if everyone in my life drinks to excess, alcoholic drinking makes it perfectly normal. And so I came to Al-Anon pretty desensitized about what was normal and what wasn't normal. I had no clue. I didn't know what abusive was. I didn't know what emotional abuse was. I only knew physical. That was easy. You don't hit me. But spiritual and emotional, I was just shut down. I didn't know. I may struggle if I've never known the drinker. I may struggle in the form of daily bouts of anxiety, difficulty trusting anyone or anything. Always waiting for chaos or disaster to strike. Even when all seems well, I find myself inexplicably haunted by insecurity, fear, guilt, obsession with others, or an overwhelming need to control every person and situation I encounter. And although my loved ones appear to be the ones with the problem, I secretly blame myself, feeling that I somehow am the cause. And this disease is very selfish, self-centered for me. You know, I didn't know selfish, self-centered. I thought I was a very caring person because it was all about you. But really, it has nothing to do with you. My disease, the way I'm affected by the family disease of alcoholism, is selfish, self-centered. I really don't give a shit about what you think, what you want, what you do. I don't really care if you're happy, but you need to be okay so I can be okay. So, and if that means you need to be happy, then okay, we're going to make you happy so I can be okay. I have an inside problem and I'm looking for an outside solution. I didn't know that. I couldn't stand being right here, right now. I couldn't stand being in the moment of right here, right now. I wanted to get out of right here, right now, as fast as I could, because I couldn't stand it. My skin felt like I was inside out. My head was always spinning, and I didn't even know. I didn't know. It was a normal way of life to me. I didn't know I had anxiety until I stopped having it an hour on. I'm like, wow, I didn't know. I was all jacked up. If you think I'm jacked up today, well, you should have seen me when I came in. And so how do I get out of right here, right now? That's what I needed to look at in Al-Anon. I, who can identify the problem of active alcoholism, has no idea what to do about it. I may have poured out liquor, hidden it, hidden money, taken a few drinks myself in order to leave less for the alcoholic or to feel part of their life. I have argued, pleaded, bargained, threatened, walked out, came back, given ultimatums, failed to carry them out, or carried them out and felt guilty. I've tried to reason, scheduled their free time, monitored their behavior. I've complained. I've prayed. I've tried to avoid doing anything that might cause the alcoholic to drink. I've searched for opportunities to make the drinker see how destructive their drinking can be. Mostly, I've hurt and I've worried. For those who are no longer around active alcoholism, it can be even more stymied. I've changed my circumstances, my job, my clothes, my friendships, my locations, my religion, practically everything about myself. But nothing seems to have a lasting impact. I come to Al-Anon for many different reasons, but I only stay for one. And you know, I've tried to change everything. I even changed continents. This is as far as I could get away from where I grew up. And I didn't even know I was doing it. I just fell in love and I stayed. I volunteered for 14 years of illegal in the United States, which really makes it hard to work an honest program, by the way, when you come into Al-Anon. And it really makes it hard to have conversations with people. Say, well, you can't even buy a Kia, just get a loan. And I'm like, no, really. And you know, really, it's really hard. But I learned that it's an anonymous program, but it ain't that anonymous. So don't be surprised if something comes out of your mouth and it comes back at you, because it does happen. And I'm okay with that, because I take responsibility for what I say, and if it comes back, it comes back, and I stand by what I say. But I knew better than to let people know that I was illegal. So that was something that I didn't talk about. I kept coming back, and I got a sponsor. And thank you. Without my sponsor, I would not be the woman that I am today. Thank you for taking time out of your life, for driving every Monday, putting up with my shit, because tell you, that was not easy. If anything, that should have given you some recovery, right? And thank you for working a good program. Thank you for teaching me how to be a sponsor. And thank you for your selflessness, for knowing where to steer me. When I needed nurture, he would steer me to where they were nurtured by women. I hated women. Oh, nope. Didn't hate you, but I just had no room for you. It was just like tedious. And when I started progressing in my service, I got redirected to a woman that took me to where I never thought I could go, that really shattered that glass ceiling for me in my recovery. And thank you for your selflessness in doing that. It's not about the sponsor, it's about where the sponsee needs to go and what they need. And the one thing I appreciate is your honesty. See, only my sponsor could tell me that I was an emotional prostitute. And of course, he wants to explain, and I'm like, no, I got it. I got that. That I got. Because see, I thought that I needed you to do for me. And in return, it was like, who would you want me to be? Oh, you need that? I can do that for you. Oh, you want to go there? Sure. Oh, you want some compliments? I'll give you some compliments. What is it? What do you need? Here's my soul on a platter. Take it. But boy, oh boy, if you don't return that favor to me. Because see, that's how I do relationships. It's a disease of relationships. I get into a relationship and I'm happy for a year, but I can't get out. And then I'm stuck for the next 8. And I do for you, and you signed that contract, and you're supposed to do for me, and then you're not doing. I'm like, wow, we're not relating so well right now. So now there's the passive aggressive. So we give hints, because you're smart. If you love me, you would figure it out. Right? If you love me, you would know. You would know. Come on, pay attention. Gentlemen. Intimacy. Not talking about the bedroom. Intimacy. Didn't know what that was. I can talk to you about my sex life. I can talk here about my sex life, but do not ask me to talk to the person that I'm having it with to talk. I'd rather just do it. Much easier. Yeah. How am I ever going to have intimacy with another human being if I can't communicate that? And I wasn't capable of communication because today's information was tomorrow's ammunition, so that wasn't going to work. And I didn't know what I didn't know about me. I would tell myself a bunch of lies and then I would sell them to you. And if you believe them, it's really easy to peddle. It's really easy to sell them. And then it just gets all garbled up. And so Al-Anon gave me clarity about who I am, what I feel, and what I think. And I didn't think it was funny, and I didn't like it at all. The 12th step that says having had a spiritual awakening, that's a promise. That's a guarantee. It doesn't say maybe you get one, but you don't. Of course, I thought I wasn't going to, but I kept seeing that it says having had. I'm like, oh, everybody's going to get it. What if I don't get it? Then I have nothing to say in meetings one more time. I'm not going to cop up that I didn't get it. And it says we try to carry the message. It doesn't say I have to be perfect. Because really, you learn from me what I do right, and you learn from my mess even better, probably. Because I learn from other people's messes way better than the ones that are going to give me their wisdom. Like, yeah, I got it. I'm the one that likes to get the hard knocks. I'm the one that needs the 2x4. And so, one way or the other, I carry a message. And one way or another, you're going to get some recovery out of it. Or not. That's the choice that we get in Al-Anon. And so, I hated my mother. And I got along with my dad quite well. My dad was a black and white thinker. If I'm right, you're wrong. And that was it. That was no gray. And a boundary was a boundary, and there was never a negotiation. I didn't learn how to negotiate in my house. There was no gray. Again, relationships get really hard that way. My way or the highway. Black or white. You're right, I'm wrong. Keith, it's gray. It's in the gray. Al-Anon is in the gray. If you read any of the service manual, anything, there is never a hard and fast rule. It drives people crazy. Because now I have to figure out what it is for me, and then I have to be willing to be wrong and put it out there, and then I have to be willing to stand for something. Wow. I learned that in service. I learned that in service. And so I started looking at where do I come from? How did I grow up? My mom was my best friend. I was her best friend, I was her gossip partner, I was her mother, I was her father, I was the husband, that my dad was a merchant marine, he wasn't always home. And what we call that is emotional incest. I had no idea. Detrimental to relationships. Skin is a boundary, but emotional, there's also boundaries. You know, and I've learned that the little kids, it's so easy to grab and pick them up and toss them around. They're like, no. I'm like, ha ha ha. They're saying no. Can I honor that? Can I honor the boundary of skin if they don't want to be touched and they don't want to be tossed around? And I was like, wow, I want people to honor my boundaries, but I can't even honor a little kid's boundary. So that got my attention in preteen. And as I kept coming back, I had to start working the steps. And I started working the steps, and I started with step one. And one of the things that is my favorite chapter is chapter 5, struggling with reality. All too often in the past, reality interfered with my plans. It does. It's freaking annoying. Crisis shattered the fantasy. My perceptions proved unreliable, and I was increasingly less able to cope. I couldn't evaluate my options. I couldn't even trust my own memories. I remember that I would be in agony. I couldn't trust what I saw. I needed you to confirm what I saw. I needed somebody to say, I needed him to say, I'm drinking. I know, but if it wasn't in black and white with a signature, I might be wrong. And I couldn't be wrong. Because I had to be so right, because I was so wrong on the inside that I had to be right on the outside. I was often unwilling or unable to accept reality I had been forced to see. And with renewed vigor, I adopted new coping mechanisms in order to survive. With renewed vigor, I was very vigorous. My disease is very adaptable, very smart. I ignore the problems. I rationalize. I distract myself, blaming. I put great energy into looking good in public. And in an effort to be loyal, I lied and made excuses and laughed off the alcoholic's behavior as well as my own. Wow, I would laugh at myself and not take myself serious. Neither did I take anything serious. Because I want what I want and I will have it. And if I have to ignore and I have to blame and shame, I don't care. I need. I'm a very needy person. I have an inside problem and I go outside for the solution, and him would be a good one. I create fantasy lives so that I didn't have to think about the pain in which I actually lived. These could be extremely pleasant, too good to be true. Everyone was kind and loving, and all my needs and desires were satisfied, and I felt happy all the time. Or I created a darker world in which I imagined the pain, guilt, or death of the alcoholics in my life in the misguided belief that in their absence would free me from my torment. How often have I not wished somebody would die? Because that was so much easier. Not a normal solution. You could just break up with the guy. You could go to a different meeting because somebody drives me crazy. But if she would get in a car accident, for Christ's sake, I see her every day and then I do service and then she's there and then I go to different service and she's there. And it's like, what do I need to do to get away from this woman? I wish she would just have an accident. Pretty normal thought. Yeah, if I say it out loud, it sounds tacky, but in my head, it sounds really good. That's why I have to share sometimes in meeting, because if I don't say things out loud, they sound really good in my head. Not a normal solution. I don't come up with normal solutions for my problems. Having a normal conversation? No, not so much. I had vengeful fantasies, visualizing the alcoholic or others suffering for the suffering I believed they had inflicted upon me, and imagining a kind of power over my circumstances that I lacked in real life. Wow. Love the idea of power. And until I was able to face reality, I honestly could not see that I played a crucial role in my creating my own misery. I am where I am, and I was where I was because of the decisions I did or did not take. It is not anybody else's fault. I can't blame anybody anymore, because today I have choices, and if I choose to be in a situation that's not good for me, then I'm choose to be there. And until I want to get out of it, that's where I'm going to be. Until I do something different, I'm going to get what I'm going to get. And so, again, sponsorship. I believe that if I don't talk to my sponsor, I'm not being sponsored. I talk to my sponsor on a weekly basis. I talk to a service sponsor on a weekly basis. And I talk to a slew of other people. I need a lot of babysitting. You cannot leave me alone unattended. Especially not alone at home. When I start isolating alone at home, I'm going to have fun for half a day. And then the second day, I think I'm doing really great until I leave the house. And I start believing all the lies that the disease tell me. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not tall enough. I don't make enough money. I'm not cute enough. I'm not whatever enough. I'm not nice enough. That famous Al-Anon word, nice enough. If you look it up in the dictionary, it says agreeable. Just because I'm not agreeable doesn't mean I'm not nice. I don't have to be agreeable to be loved. I don't have to be agreeable and sell my soul in order to think that then you're going to like me better. I don't have to do that anymore. I also don't have to change no matter who walks into a room. I can still be me. I can be present whether there's a conflict or not. You know, I used to be the controversy in the room. Today I do conflict resolution. Imagine that. If I'm in conflict with myself, I'm in conflict with others. I need to know where I'm at. I need to know who I am in order to be okay in a conflict. It's fine. Because the conflict rarely has anything to do with me. Because we have these survival skills. That how Al-Anon talks about. And emotional survival skills. can also alter the way I see past events and relationships. When memories of horrors from the past are too shocking or painful, I may unconsciously block them out. I simply don't remember. Even if I fervently wish I could remember, these memories remain locked away, continuing to control my life by limiting or altering my behavior. Without being aware of it, I continue to react to the traumatic events of my past rather than to the reality of my life today. So really, it has little to do with you. That you just happen to look and walk and talk like my mom, yeah, that's in your disadvantage. I'm sorry. But it's for me to resolve that. It's for me to know what my triggers are. It's for me to know what I'm reacting to. Just because you trigger me, just because something in me calls up my fear, and fear is the chief activator of all my character defects, doesn't mean it is about you. Not you as a person. So, I started doing service, and started the speaker meeting. I think that was in my first or second year. Woo! And I walked in this room, and I hadn't been in this room, and I thought, how are we going to set this up? So I have an idea instantly. And so everybody's like, what do we do? I said, okay, I want the chairs like that. And they put them a different way. And I'm like, did I not just? I had no tools. I'm like, did I? So I went in the back corner there because somebody was doing the coffee pot, and I'm just bitching under my breath because I have a severe potty mouth. And the person goes, are you okay? I said, I will be in about 5 minutes. So I walked back and I said, I want those chairs like that. And I put the tables over there, and the tables started walking to other places. Where are the tables going? Well, we think they should go over there. It was such an Al-Anon thing, and I was like fit to be tied. And so, and then came the day that I didn't know if you start a speaker meeting that they make you the secretary of the Gars Dan thing. So I had to be secretary of the speaker meeting. And and I was still a smoker, and I was up here, and I was opening the meeting, and I didn't like microphones. And I was so spun that I didn't even know what language you're speaking, and I'm trilingual. But you were sitting like you were sitting right now, so it must have been okay. That's all I knew. Nobody was freaking out, but I was freaking out. Now, you can't tell. Nobody apparently could tell, but I was freaking out. And I hear this voice, and next thing I know, I'm walking away, and I'm like, okay, I gotta go outside. I was crawling out of my skin. And I went downstairs, and I crawled into a bush, and I started smoking. And Cliff walks outside. I'm like, hey! He goes, Yvonne, where are you? I'm like, over here. He goes, where? I'm like, in a bush. What are you doing in the bush? I said, I can't stand people looking at me. I just can't stand it. I was hyperventilating. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. And he goes, well, it's almost time to go back upstairs. I'm like, oh my God, is that already over a whole hour? Now I have to close this thing up. And I went home and I sat for 2 days spinning, scared that you were going to tell me not to come back. And I couldn't make any phone calls because it says let there be no gossip. And if you want to be perfect, then you can't make phone calls and gossip. So how in the hell am I going to find out what you're thinking? Well, I just had to show up at another meeting, and I was like holding my breath. And I tell you, that's how I felt for the first year that I did the speaker meeting. Spun. I wasn't crying. I wasn't laughing. I wasn't anything. And people go, oh, what's so good? And I'm like, why? If you say so, It took a long time for me to settle in. And then I started the day in Al-Anon. And then I started the Al-Anon Sponsors R&R. And then I started all the meetings in the state prisons of Northern California. Now, was that all a plan? No, it wasn't. I just get a bright idea and I roll with it. And then I get myself into trouble halfway through that great idea and think, well, ho, this is not what I want. I don't want to do this, but I'm not going to say no because I want to look good. So my assets, my defects are now my assets. So I'm going to roll through this, good, bad, ugly, or indifferent. And and people look at me and they say, oh, well, yeah, it's not a problem for you. I'm like, how do you know that? I know the anxiety. I know how it is to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and my head is spinning and the committee is in session and my stomach is so clenching that I need to throw up and I can't think straight and I can't sleep and I can't breathe because somebody's got their hand on my throat. I know how that feels. I've had that every day of the week just because I was doing service. But I kept showing up. I kept shooting up and I kept showing up because making the commitment becomes the recovery. Because when I make the commitment, I become available for people, places, and circumstances that before I was unable or unwilling to deal with. All I need to do is say yes and honor that commitment, and God will do the rest. My God shows up big time every time I say and do something. I, on the other hand, am hyperventilating. I, on the other hand, when I stood to be chair for Northern California, I was like, I didn't want to do it. I was copping out, and my sponsor goes, oh, I want to cop out? Cop out. I'm like, okay, took me 3 months. I'm like, fine, I'll go stand. But it was a lose-lose proposition. Because if you're not going to pick me, then I'm rejected and I can never come back. And if you do pick me, you're going to have a funeral soon because the three-day assembly is going to come around and you're going to crucify me and hang me from the highest tree. So it was a lose-lose proposition. Either way, I could not see a way out. And so I stood with five other people. I get the job and I started thinking, how can I get out of this gracefully? How can I gracefully, without you knowing that I'm scared, unable, incapable, stupid, all of that, how can I get out of this gracefully with a watertight excuse and say no? I couldn't figure it out. So I thought, I'll just wait for the funeral. October, three-day assembly, it's going to be my funeral. You're going to crucify me. The beauty of saying yes, and people quote this from the path to recovery, is that God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. I've had those experiences where I didn't think I was qualified. I didn't think I could do that. I didn't think I had leadership skills. I didn't think I could communicate. I didn't think I could speak. I didn't think I could talk without cussing. I didn't think I could not be nasty. It's easy to be nasty. I passed on nasty today, by the way. I was on the phone with a store. I said, can I return this? She goes, it would be better. I said, can I return this? But you need to understand. I said, can I return this? I said, you're giving me a lot of reasons why I shouldn't, but can I return this? She goes, I said, no. Can I return this? Can I get cash? She goes, yes. I said, okay, that's all I wanted. You want me to go out of my way to go somewhere different? This is handier for me. And I decided not to do handy. I decided to go out of my way and honor that. I just wanted to go there just to show her I could, but I didn't. It's easy to be amused with me. So what happened in those months before the three-day assembly is that I needed to do some conflict resolution in a district. There were two districts that I did conflict resolution. One was for a meeting and one was for a district. And for the district, I was on the hot seat for 3 hours, and I decided that our current delegate was going to do the talking and that I was just going to shut up for a change. And somebody asked the question, and he is giving an answer, and I'm sitting there thinking, that's not really an answer. That would piss me off. And that woman just jumped out of her chair and started screaming. And the next thing I know, my hand is in the air, and I'm thinking, not a good idea, Yvonne, that's not a good idea. You should not stick your hand in the air. But I did. And for 3 hours, I did okay. And I felt okay, and I was whole on the inside. And I thought, this is great, God. I'm whole in a business meeting. I don't want to live in business meetings. I want to live my life whole, please. So I walk out of that meeting, and I'm a mess. I'd just broken up with a boyfriend, lived in that area, and I'm crying all the way to another conflict resolution. I scheduled it on the same day. I thought that was a good idea. Didn't know I was going to not know how to spell my name. I'm crying. I'm redoing my makeup. And I'm thinking, now what? Okay, go inside and just figure it out. And so I went in, and intuitively I knew what that meeting needed. And that meeting was a meeting that was 30 years old, and it was created by Peggy C., a former delegate. And every time I was at that meeting doing conflict resolution, and let me tell you, there's some personalities in there, no one told me what the problem was. So I came in blind, which was the idea. And, Peggy C. And I'm like, yeah, I know Peggy C. I'm like, great. Peggy's here every day. And when I walked away, I think a month later I had assembly, and I stood up there and I didn't sleep all night long, and my knees were knocking, and I thought, okay, funeral time. Better get some enjoyment out of that. So I get up there and I looked over all these people. There was about 350 or 400 of you. And now I know that you all individually think you can do things better. So it's not easy standing in front of people that know how things should be. And I was a GR. I used to do that. I used to know what should happen up there. And after an hour, I felt whole. And I knew that intuitively God had qualified me to know what I needed to do. I didn't think I had the knowledge. I didn't think I knew what to say. I didn't think I knew how to do it, but I did. And so I learned how to dance with the God of my understanding. And I learned that in service. And it was marvelous. It was totally exhilarating. but can also tell you that having had a spiritual awakening is the most painful, the most excruciating, snot in the carpet, wanting to kill myself, anxiety, nightmare, feelings that now I know why I never wanted to feel them. That is what my spiritual awakening looked like in between. But the results are exhilarating. There's nothing more addicting than recovery. There's no better high. There's no, you can't go any higher. And it never gets boring. It's a puzzle that changes every day as I change. And I get to play with it. And how interesting that you can do this all by yourself with other people. You don't have to have a him or a she. You don't have to have anybody to be happy. I can be happy all by myself. And of course, I have needs, and sometimes I need companionship, and sometimes I need to have conversation, but I know where to go for that. And if I don't know what to do, I'll go to a meeting. I used to go to 7 to 10 meetings a week, and I did that for many, many, many years, on top of doing servers, on top of doing all that stuff. And people always said, oh, you're so modest. Well, yeah, because if I tell you what I did, then you're gonna watch me and go, well, no, you're not that good. I couldn't own anything. It wasn't modest. People that think that don't know my recovery, don't know their recovery. Today I can say, I'm a good sponsor. I tell you the truth. You don't have to take it. You don't have to hear it. Because when I came here, I didn't talk. I didn't feel. No talking, no dealing, no feeling. Lots of guilt, lots of anger, lots of isolation. And I isolated because I was so not good enough that it was hard to see my self-esteem reflected in your eyes. Couldn't stand it. Couldn't stand it. Unless you were nice to me and tell me I was okay, I wasn't okay. Guilt? I learned it's a lack of self-love. Better yet, I'd rather feel guilty than feel powerless. Can't stand feeling powerless. I'd rather feel guilty. And oh yeah, I have to sell my soul so you can be happy, so I don't have to feel guilty. Right. Don't have to do that anymore. Guilt is a part of my upbringing. There's always guilt in the background, but I don't cater to that anymore. Nobody gets to tell me who I am. You may not like me, and that's okay. There's lots of you I don't like. Nothing to do with you. Everything to do with Yvonne. That's how I stay separate. I still don't want to deal. I still don't want to talk. But I've learned that I'm a communicator. Figure that. Didn't know that. Didn't think I had language skills. I'm a foreigner. I didn't think I knew how to say anything. I learned that in Al-Anon. I learned how to communicate. I learned how to express myself. I learned how to dress. Going into prisons, I couldn't wear what I wanted to wear. Definitely not this. Took me an hour or 2 hours on a $5 t-shirt in a secondhand store because it couldn't be the way I needed it to be. And I wasn't, I feel weird. Uniboob, can't have underwire. I'm sorry, my boobs are fine. I like them in their place, not right here, not underneath my chin. I had to learn so many things going in there. You mean I can't do the cute little girl? No, that does not work. I had to stand in my own two shoes. And I'm doing a meeting by myself and I'm thinking, oh, if this fails, they're all going to find out. I'm always waiting for you to find out. I'm always playing the imposter. I so want you to accept me. I so want you to love me, but you can't get to know me. Well, that's the problem. Because you can't love what you don't know. Can't love what you don't know. So how am I going to do that? How's that going to work? Somewhere along the way, I have to start trusting one other person. And really, sponsorship, I thought it needed to be somebody like me, my clone, who would get me. Really, you can get anybody. You do not have to have anybody that looks like you, thinks like you. It really has nothing to do with that. I'm not ready. Well, I was never ready for anything in my life. That's why I procrastinate. That's why I never wanted to do nothing. The only way I knew that I was ready and that I could do it was by doing it. Every time I say no to the God of my understanding, I'm saying no to me and my life. If my day timer doesn't have anything in it that says that I need to be somewhere, then the answer is yes. And I've said a lot of yeses to a lot of things that I did not want to do, and a lot of sleepless nights, and a lot of my sponsor, please tell me I don't have to do this. You don't understand. You don't get it. One day at a time, kiddo. Great. I'm spun one more time. Is that all gone? No, it's not. But my life is different. It is good.
but I still have all the difficulties that everybody else has. And don't look at me and think that that you can't see it. This is what I do. I look good. This is what Al-Anon is about. We know how to look good. So I kept coming back and I kept doing service and I struggled through everything that I needed to learn. And that's where I learned how to be me. In Alateen, I learned how to grow up. The Alateen taught me what it was to be a responsible adult. Because one of my favorite things is not to take responsibility. So when they say, Yvonne, can I have a cigarette? I'll be right back. Running to John, who was the sponsor back then. I said, John, guess what? They're asking me for a cigarette. And he just go, are you out of your mind? I'm like, hold on. I'm from the Netherlands. It works different there. That was my excuse. I'm Dutch. And he just looks at me and he said, it's, I'm like, okay, I got it. And so I go back and said, John says no. That's the same as like, well, my sponsor says it, I have to tell you. I always hid behind different people. And I had to say things like, well, but she thinks, and she also says, and oh, Marie also thinks. So that makes it all of a sudden valid. It wasn't until I stood on my own 2 feet and used my voice without added weight of people or riding somebody's coattails or hiding behind others that I found out that it's okay to say what I need to say. It's okay to ask for what I need to ask for. I didn't know that. I had to do that. And it's funny that everybody always laughs about it, but really think about how many times you go, well, so-and-so said, and it's like, well, if you didn't, or if you wouldn't have said that, you told me to go there. I still make all the choices I make to follow or not follow any suggestion or advice or good idea, including my own. So the fourth step, I didn't want to do the fourth step. I didn't want to confirm what I already knew. And yet I took the fourth step and I figured out I'm not the woman that I thought I was. I'm like, oh, thank you, God. And then I figured out I wasn't the woman that I thought I was. I'm like, well, that's disappointing, because I was all that. I'm two of the same thing. I'm playing the imposter because I can't let you find out who I am, and yet I want to show you how good I am at the same time. Isn't that interesting? And neither of it is true. And so I found out who I was by taking an inventory of what I possessed and what I didn't possess. I got a lot of character defects, but all my defects are my assets. So that means that I have a lot of assets if I use them in the correct way. And I make the choice to use them in the correct way, like I did today. I was nice. I didn't go to Livermore. I went to Walnut Creek. And it worked out well. Found what I needed. And so I keep coming back. I keep coming back to the God of my understanding. And my parents, my father is dead. And my father disinherited me. Because if it's his way or the highway. So if you don't do what he tells you to do, you're out. And so he wrote me a letter that I was never born and my name will never be mentioned. And it's all my fault and on and on and on and on. And so, and then he died. He didn't talk to me for at least, I don't know, 15 years. And he dies and I'm in recovery. And so I decided to go to the Netherlands. And I hadn't been home. I hadn't been home in a long time because I was illegal for a long time. So I couldn't really travel over there. And 9/11 shut everything down. So I was grounded for quite some time. And I was going crazy at that too. I couldn't stand being grounded. I couldn't stand being in prison. I couldn't stand not being able to do whatever I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, and how I wanted to do it. But I went back. And here is how God qualifies the called. I started doing service for institutions. And that was May of that year. And I went to a conference, and there was a woman who's in the Spanish Big Book. Her name is Doris. And she was talking about being incarcerated in the Netherlands. And I thought, I wonder what for? Well, drugs, duh, if I didn't know that. But okay, I'm sitting there, I wonder what for? Well, she was caught with suitcases of drugs and she got a sentence and she served 14 years. And so she was an impromptu speaker. And after the meeting, I went up to her and she started crying and she says, you saved my life. And I'm like, no, that's my accent, but I get it. And we became friends over that weekend and we spent some good time together. And she talked about her sponsor, Martha. And so in October of that year, my father died of a massive heart attack. And within the hour, I was at the airport and I'm flying home and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going home, but I don't know anybody there. Because this is my home, this is my family. And I'd never been that far away from what I call home nowadays, Al-Anon. And I got on the plane and I went over there. And 2 weeks before that, there was the Northern California Alateen Conference that I was the sponsor for. And there was a girl that her father had died and on that Friday. And I caught her in the middle of the night and she was crying. And she said, you know, I keep seeing my father lay out and I can't close my eyes. And I sat with her for the rest of the night. And I talked to her thinking that I knew what I was talking about. That's another ism. And so here I am in the Netherlands and I arrived there and there's my mom and my ex-boyfriend is there. And I'm thinking, I did not dream for 16 years, did I? I actually left, didn't I? And I did. It was just weird to walk in and everything hadn't changed. Thinking, am I in a nightmare here or what? Because I was quite out to lunch that my dad had just spontaneously died. And so we went to the mortuary and we went to visit him. And then I get to a friend's house and I want to go to bed because I've been awake for 2 days. And I close my eyes and here's my father on that metal slab floating in front of my eyes. And I'm like, I can't close my eyes. But Doris, I had called her at the airport and she gave me the number of Martha. And so I got my number out of the back of my pocket and I called Martha. And I said, hi, Martha, my name is Yvonne and I'm a friend of Doris. And I just started crying. And she goes, hi, Yvonne, what can I do for you? I said, can I talk to you? And she goes, sure. I said, can I talk in English? Because see, if I would talk Dutch, that would mean I have arrived there. My body was there, but my spirit and my mind was still here. And I did not speak Dutch for 2 weeks. Everybody had to speak English to me. They thought it was the weirdest thing. Never done that since, never done it before. And she says, sure. And I said, how did you meet Doris? I've been wanting to know that for a long time. And so she starts telling me her story. And I can tell you, for half an hour, I was able to breathe. For half an hour, that image left me. And for half an hour, it was okay, because that's what we do. We share experience, strength, and hope. And for half an hour, I felt heard. I felt seen. I felt loved. I felt okay. I wasn't good, but I was okay. And if I would not have said yes to service, and I would not have showed up at that conference, and I would not, and I would not, and I would not, I would have not had all those tools and that phone number to deal with what I needed to deal with when I got there. And so many times, God has given me what I needed way before I needed it. Can I trust that I have everything I need? Can I trust that I have everything I need for right now? I don't know what I need tomorrow. And yeah, I'm like, ah! I've been homeless, still scared to be homeless. I've been broke, still scared to be broke. I've been everything, my worst fears. My worst fears. And I still have them. But I have experience that have proved me wrong. That has proved me wrong. And nothing was ever as bad as I thought it would be. Never. And so when I started accepting me, I started accepting you. And when I'm okay with me, I have serenity. I have serenity. You know, I sit with guys that say, control cost me 27 years of my life. Because I got a life sentence and I killed my best friends because he didn't do what I wanted him to do. I get that. I get that. Did I do that? No. But I get that. I get the insanity of wanting what you want and going through having no limits. And so there is no limit on my recovery. There is no place I wouldn't drive to. There is no place I wouldn't go to. And there's no a thing that I didn't, that I'm not willing to do. May not like it, but I'm willing to do it. I have all the fears. I have all the anxieties. As the chair, I needed to go to a conference. I'm sitting in my chair and I can't get out of the chair. I can't move. So I called my best friend. I said, check it out. I need to go. I need to get to my car. I can't move. She goes, what do you mean? I said, I can't move. I can't go outside. I'm frozen. I have so much anxiety, I can't move. Really? She goes, well, that's interesting. I can see the headlines. Chair of Northern California can't get out of her chair. I'm like, fuck you, bitch. And I'm walking out of my house. And I get to the car and I said, okay, I'm at the car. Piss me off one more time and I can actually drive. Because anger gives me adrenaline. I become capable of doing things that I'm not capable of doing without. I thrive on anger. A little bit of resentment will work. All of that stuff. And I got in the car and I was good. I was good. I'm the girl that wakes up in the morning. This was on a summer's day. And I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I wonder how long, if I would die, how long would it take for Al-Anon to find me? Looking at my phone. I'm like, that could be 3 days. I'm like, you know, it'll probably be a week. I would probably be smelling and decomposing before these bitches call me. Or actually think, why is she not picking up? Now I'm getting this whole attitude with Al-Anon, right? After all I do in service. I thought, you know what? Screw you. I'm done. Done with service. I'm done with all these personalities. I'm done with politics. I'm not doing it anymore. So I get up and I get dressed. This is before I go to work. By the way, I get dressed. I'm on my way to my car. And I'm thinking, oh. But I promised to call this woman because so-and-so is doing that conference and I really like her. And I really, okay, I'm going to make one more phone call and then I'm done. Because nobody cares about me. Nobody cares. Poor me. I'm useless, whatever. So I make the phone call. And this woman was a trustee, and I was on a committee with her. And she goes, Yvonne! Because I'm like, this is Yvonne, California North, San Francisco Bay Area. I don't know if you remember me. She goes, Yvonne, I was just talking about you with so-and-so when we had board. I'm like, you were? Somebody thought about me and talked about me? I got instantly happy. I thought, well, maybe I'm not done. A trustee is thinking about me. How exciting. You know, it's that easy for me to get good or to get bad. You know, I have this forever after. Everything is going to be fine. I'll never get angry anymore. Or I'll never ever have anything. This is my two extremes that I live in. And Al-Anon puts me in the middle. It puts me in the gray. My head comes up with, I don't need anybody. I came in, I had no qualifier. I wasn't married. I wasn't dating. I thought I was illegal in this program because I didn't have a drunk alcoholic falling off my couch. But I fit all the symptoms. I fit all the lists. Figure that. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of my life. That's why I came and that's why I stayed. There was nowhere else better to go. There was nothing else to do for me. And so that makes me come back. Why would I not come back here? Even if I'm crazy today, it's never as bad as when I came in. When I came in, I felt unheard, unseen. I had abject terror of abandonment in my stomach that just clutches me and I can't breathe. It was horrible. I was either better than or not good enough. You looked at me wrong. Oh my God, what did I do? What did I say? It has to be me. Selfish, self-centered. And I had to learn how to meditate. I had to learn how to be with me, and I didn't want to do that either. So my sponsor says, you can spin all you want. Try spinning after 20 minutes sitting in a chair. I'm like, fine. I laid on my bed. I was going to sit in the chair. I was going to lay on the bed. And I tried to spin for 20 minutes all by myself while I was meditating. It does not work. So then I got to step 11, and she was like, sit in the chair for 20 minutes. I'm like, oh my God. So I would sit. I would put the timer, and I would find myself in the kitchen. Didn't even know I got up. Next thing I know, I live in a small cottage, but still five steps or three steps. Or I would all of a sudden have my phone in the hand and yeah. Didn't want to call anybody, but all of a sudden I'm making a call and it's like, and I said, you know, I can't do this. She goes, there's too much drama in your house. I said, there's nobody living with me. What are you talking about? She goes, well, it's your house. I said, well, she goes, it's your shit. I'm like, go outside. I'm like, great, go outside. Thank God, summer. So I go outside and I get these, want to get up. And once I got past those, I started crying. Every time I sat down, I was crying. I'm like, I don't like feelings. I don't like crying. I said, this is not working for me. She goes, just hang with it. She goes, why is it so difficult for you? I said, because I believed in God, but I didn't believe God believed in me. And now I can fail with you. I can get rejected by you. But what if the final frontier, that higher power, rejects me? Then where do I go? So I'd rather not know about that. I'd rather sort of be with God from a distance. I really don't want to go there. Because I'm not going to have that spiritual awakening. I always think everybody else but not me. Everybody gets it but not me. Everybody gets recovery except me. Everybody's happy except me. That's my disease. And so I got through that too. And I kept sitting down with those 20 minutes. And that hole gets smaller and smaller. When I meditate in the morning and the evenings, and I'm just quiet and sitting with me, and sometimes I don't want to sit with me. It's too busy, too whatever. You know, and I make it 10 minutes. Okay, I do 10. That hole goes away. That abandonment, that rejection goes away. And so, yeah, I have abandonment issues. It affects me every day of my life. I'm good by myself, thank you. And that's exactly what my disease tells me. I'm not good by myself. I like being by myself. That's different. I like being alone, but I don't have to be lonely. And I didn't get sick by myself, and I can't get healthy by myself. So I took the steps from how Al-Anon works. And loneliness can strike at any time, and crisis knows no schedule. Though through the steps, I can fill that empty place within me where loneliness and pain reside. I come alive in a way I have never experienced before. Step one. As long as I persist in the delusion that I can control or cure alcoholism, its symptoms or its effects, I continue to fight a battle that I cannot win. By being honest, I let go of the illusion that kept me imprisoned in an endless cycle of repetitious self-defeating behavior and inevitable disappointment. And I took all of this from how Al-Anon works. And so when I worked step one, admitted I'm powerless, my life has become manageable. Step back, take your hands off whatever it is that I'm trying to move, shape, need into what I need it to be. And my life has become unmanageable, just shut up. And when I step back and I shut up, and I don't interfere, I get to see God. And I automatically get to go to step two. In step two, what has been impossible for me on my own becomes possible because I have placed myself in the presence of something that surpasses my individual human capacity. Just by attending a meeting or opening up to a sponsor or seeking solace in Al-Anon literature, I have reached out for help of a power greater than myself and have tapped into the collective wisdom of this fellowship. To take step two, I don't have to believe that only a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, only that it could. Step two is about possibility, and that's why it's about hope. I did not get a God in step two. I hear these people, step two, I've got a God. I'm like, wow, I must be doing something wrong. That's not how that worked for me. It's a process. But I became aware of a possibility that there could be a higher power and I could tap into that. Am I willing to find out? Am I willing? Great, let's go to step three. In step three, I had to turn in my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. What I needed to do is I needed to take the third step prayer and I needed to pull that apart. Because when I pray a prayer, I pray somebody else's words. I'm just blah, 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 blah. What does that really mean? What am I asking of this higher power? And I needed to define that third step prayer. I needed to take that third step prayer apart so that I knew what I was asking. And then I need to make a decision. Is that what I want? And I did. I wanted that. And I put myself in the care of God. So now I put God under obligation. And so all I need to do is make a decision. By making such a commitment, I stop setting myself up for a failure. For the failure I have known in the past when I've tried to manipulate people and events that were beyond my control. And I have opened the door for help and stepped out of the way. I can only deepen my commitment every time I surrender anew. And I needed to surrender into the fourth step. Because between four and seven is where I get to meet the God of my understanding. Those are the steps of change, and the third step prayer does not have an amen on the end, so it's an open prayer. It is designed to carry me all the way through seven. That's how I get the strength, is to tap into that power and think that there's possible for me to do this. Step four is an inventory, a list of characteristics, thought and behavior patterns, relationships and events that make us who I am today. To learn about myself, my strengths, my unconscious habits, unrecognized talents, my unspoken shame, my secret delights and hidden passions. Until I know exactly where I am, I cannot know where I'm headed. Wow. I always wanted to go somewhere, but I never knew where I was. Yeah, no wonder I got lost. Step five. I'm astonished to discover that I'm the only one who judges myself and my wrongs harshly. I avoid the temptation to justify my behaviors and attitudes, blame others or excuse my past wrongs. I also avoid dismissing my talents and invalidate my character assets. I'm building a new life. Some of the building involves tearing down materials and stand in the way of my plans, but the process also involves taking the best of what I already have and expanding on that. I get rid of what is not useful to me, but I take the best of what I have, and I didn't think I owned anything, so how could I ever be something? I tried to be everything to everybody. I tried to be everything to everybody, and I was nothing to myself. I was very fragmented when I came in. Al-Anon says, keep the focus on you. Well, that's a hard thing. For me, that's hard. Because I have so many things to do. What are you thinking? What are you doing? I need to please so-and-so. I am so fragmented, I didn't have singleness of purpose. And singleness of purpose is to keep the focus on me. And how do I do that? How do I take it off of you and put it on me? In order for me to have my moment, I needed to get out of your moment. I needed to stop doing for you what I'm quite capable of doing for me. I just didn't know I was. I needed to stop making everybody so dependent on me that they would never get rid of me. Because if you need me, you'll keep me. Because I didn't think I was lovable and I didn't think I was deserving of love. And I will incapacitate you to even stir your own coffee. That's my disease. I will steal your self-worth. I will steal your self-esteem. I will take everything. And then I'm going to accuse you that you don't have an opinion and can't stand up for yourself. But I'm the one that takes it because I don't have it. I can leave you with yours. I don't have to take you out of where you are today or out of your value because I know where I am. So step 6. My defects of character can be blessings in disguise because in order to be free of them, I must deepen my faith. My strength lies in accepting my role in my relationship with God. 7. I can no longer go back to the oblivion of denial, yet I'm not capable of effectively eliminating those aspects of my personality that cause me embarrassment or make my life unmanageable. Then, for the first time in the steps, I ask God directly for help. I communicate my desire to be free of excess baggage, and I simply speak from the heart. Those are the hardest steps for me, is 6 and 7. The hardest steps, because that's between me and the God of my understanding, not between me and my sponsor, not between me and you. Nobody can help me there. I have to be willing to go to God if I want to start living different. And that's where I start with the 7-step prayer. I needed to make a decision. Do I want comfort or do I want to build character? Which one is it? I do love my comfort. I don't do anything without the 2x4. But character takes hard work. It is really hard work for me because I love my comfort zones. And so that's where I made it to that decision. Step 8, before any other names are added to my 8-step list, I need to write my own name. Once my list is made, my only concern is finding the willingness to free myself from the guilt and shame my actions has caused me. In step 9, it's not about relieving my guilt at the expense of others, nor is it about setting myself up for abuse. The purpose of step 9 is to do what I can do to heal myself and my relationships and set myself free. 10. Step 10 allows me to maintain myself in good working condition, free of unnecessary burdens. 11. Prayer and meditation, I'm encouraged to interpret them in any way that works for me. I have learned the hard way that the only will worth pursuing, the guidance worth praying for, is the knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out. I was told that I am working the steps for one reason and one reason only, and that is to be of use to the God of my understanding. And in order to be of use to the God of my understanding, I have to be me, because God gave me all my assets and my defects for good reasons, so he can work with me and through me. It's not about what I want, and I always want something. That's why I wanted to go to Livermore today. Step 12, a spiritual awakening. Many of us define it as a kind of transformation, a radical change in perception that occurs as a result of taking the steps. A gradual awakening of the spirit, a gentle metamorphosis in the way we see ourselves and others. A slow and subtle unfolding of my own inner beauty. Take the time to sit still. Take the time to meditate and get to know the God of your understanding. It is so much easier to know what I'm thinking and what I'm doing when I throw a pebble in a quiet pond and I can see the ripples go out. I can't see when it's a raging river and I throw a pebble in there. That's what my mind used to be. And today I can actually be the pebble in the pond for somebody. Not too long ago, I was at the Saturday morning meeting and I sit there and they say, oh, Al-Anon Christmas. I'm like, Al-Anon Christmas? And I sat there and I was thinking about, do I want to share this or not? I don't want to do this. And I thought, well, what is humility? Being no more or less than. My sponsor taught me it's owning who I am, the good and the bad. And I said, you know, this week I felt useless. I'll make a difference. And yet there's 200 people talking about Al-Anon Christmas. Wow, if I did not have that one bright idea that I followed through on, we would not be here tonight. And still, my disease can tell me I'm useless. I don't make a difference. Still, that can hit me today. Leave me alone on my own devices too long. Don't give me what I want. And I'll go, mm. It's that easy. It is like very stealth how my disease comes in. And that's why I keep coming back, because I don't want to go back where I came from. I don't want to go back to that loneliness. Thank you for being here.